Welcome to the Interesting Football Podcast. This week, we will investigate whether Chelsea are the most interesting club in English football. I'm joined by former Solihull College student Simon Day. Mr. Day, how are you and what are your first thoughts when you hear the name Chelsea?
I am excellent and I think this is going to be a good one. My first thoughts when I hear Chelsea goes back 21 years in fact, to Gillingham's biggest ever FA Cup game, which I didn't go to. I was a student at the time, but it was the FA Cup quarterfinal of 2000, Chelsea versus Gillingham, when, because it was played late in the day on the Sunday, the draw for the semi-final had already happened. So for the only time in their history, Gillingham were in the semi-final draw for the FA Cup.
I did not know that. Nice. And what was the score?
I think we'd have had Newcastle in the semi-finals. Unfortunately, we lost 5-0.
Shame, because Newcastle, that would pretty much be a bye to the final, right?
Winnable. And then I think it was Villa in the final this year. So I think we were two steps away from Europe, really. And I can't imagine we're ever going to get closer in my lifetime.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Chesterfield have got that far, right? So, you know, have gone one further, rather.
That's true.
For me, I think with Chelsea, you know, I go back to the 97-98 season or the year before when David Pleat was Wednesday manager. Wednesday won their first four games of the season, were top of the league on 12 points. And then we played Chelsea, who were on 8 points. I went up to Hillsborough that day. I remember getting the train back down to London after Chelsea had won 2-0. And I will say the Chelsea fans' rendition of One Man Went to Mow was when they went 2-0 up was probably the loudest I've ever heard away fans at Hillsborough. But anyway, on the train on the way down, like sitting there with the Greenan and this Chelsea dad was there with his like 9-year-old son. They had their Greenan newspaper as well, reading, looking at the league table. And the son said to his dad, "Dad, I don't understand. Chelsea beat Sheffield Wednesday. So why are Chelsea still second and Sheffield Wednesday are still first?" I got the pleasure of listening to that man explain to his child that, well, you see, Sheffield Wednesday were top by so many points. It didn't matter what the score was today. They were always going to be top at the end of the day. I remember listening to that thinking, yeah, you know what? I'm never, ever going to hear this again. So I'm just going to live in this moment.
And you were right, weren't you?
I was spot on, sadly, yes. Not even close. You know, we did get to the area final of the Papa John's Trophy or whatever it's called 20 years ago. Not quite the same as topping the Premier League, but there we go.
No. And Chelsea have done a few things in the interim as well, haven't they?
I remember around that time when Dan Petrescu joined and he was talking about, oh, it's great to finally move to a big club. And Wednesday fans, this was a couple of years earlier, kind of scoffing at Chelsea bigger than Sheffield Wednesday. Who is this fool? Okay, Dan, we get your point now.
Yeah, I'll stick my neck out and say they've had a better last 24 years than Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, no, I begrudgingly accept that.
Although you did mention then David Pleat, which as soon as you mentioned David Pleat, curb crawling popped into my head.
Yes. I don't know what to say about that. I probably a bit before my time. And that was when he was at Tottenham, wasn't it?
I think that was in the 80s, yeah.
I don't know the full story, how true it was, how this, that and the other. Although, to change the subject to something a bit nicer about David Pleat, so, you know, I respect him as a man.
Something nicer than curb crawling.
him going curb crawling.
This is true.
And it's going quite high. I remember one of his kids, him writing the programme notes, might even have been that Chelsea game, about one of his kids just graduating from Oxbridge, one of the Oxford unis, with a first. So there we go. That's definitely nicer than curb crawling.
I'd probably agree with that, yeah.
But there we go. Right, okay. So, this week we're talking about Chelsea and we've got three facts. Let's see if Chelsea can knock Arsenal off their perch. Simon Day, what is fact number one?
Fact number one is from that very season you were just talking about, 1997. And Joe Sherin of Chelsea became the first player ever to have a one-minute Premier League career.
Oh, now, that is nice. That is nice.
Yeah, he came on at the end of Wimbledon versus Chelsea for 1 minute, deep into injury time. Didn't touch the ball. The final whistle blew shortly afterwards. Never appeared for Chelsea again.
What on earth is he doing that minute to... Well, he had a pretty poor minute.
We didn't touch the ball, so I mean, he didn't have a
wet himself in the centre circle.
He came on for Gianfranco Zola, which is like, I mean, if you're going to have a Premier League appearance, he's come on for like a Premier League legend. So at least he'll always have that on his CV.
Even Ali Dyer had a better career than that.
Well, he had a longer career, certainly. apparently, there's like about 30-odd players who have had a one-minute Premier League career, but way over half of them are still footballers. Right. So in theory, they could add to their tally. I mean, I don't know if Joe Sherrin is officially retired, but seeing as he'll be like 44 at the minute, it seems unlikely he'll get another minute.
But he was the first, was he?
He was the first. And there's a bit of conjecture around was he the shortest? Because the Premier League called anything after the 89th minute 1 minute.
Right.
So depending on how long injury time was, there's variants of this. But apparently Sherrin, I found a few sources that seem to think Sherrin was the shortest in terms of actual seconds on the field. The only other candidate to come close to him, apparently, is a chap called Nick Colkin, who was a Manchester United goalkeeper in the late 90s. And he came on for Raymond Van Gaal, who was the Man U keeper at the time, and Peter Schmeichel was injured. And Van Gaal got injured deep into injury time as he was lining up a goal kick. So Colkin came on, took the goal kick, and as the ball was in the air, the ref blew for the final whistle.
But still better than our Chelsea guy.
Well, he got a kick, didn't he? Yeah, exactly. he got a kick.
So how many seconds was Sherrin? Was this?
Yeah, well, it's before this was officially recorded, but we're talking like, by all accounts, it was a few seconds.
Well, you and I have probably seen a player play fewer seconds than that, haven't we?
Are we talking about Kevin Pressman?
We are indeed, yeah. Wednesday's first game down from the Premier League in a few years. Wolves really pumped for it. Okay, this is it. We're going to storm the division. This is it. Straight back to the Premier League. No doubt about it. And then Pressman was sent off after, was it 8 seconds, 10 seconds?
It was 8 seconds. So he actually did worse, didn't he? Because he only played for 8 seconds and he didn't touch the ball, but he did touch a player.
Right.
That was the problem, wasn't it? So which
he handballed out the air, wasn't it? He shot.
Oh, was it handballed?
Yeah, and he saved it outside the area.
So he touched the ball illegally. Yes. And got sent off. So, yeah, that is worse than not touching the ball, I think. If you're only touching the ball, gets you sent off. That is definitely worse.
Indeed.
Poor Kevin. So poor Joe Sherrin, though, only played like a handful of games in the Football League. He went to Bournemouth after Chelsea got rid. Didn't like what they saw at Wimbledon. He played a handful of games at Bournemouth and then fell into non-league.
Absolutely. If I'm Joe Sherrin, I'm getting the grandkids on the lap. Let me tell you about your old man. I used to play in the Premier League. Yeah, do you have any videos? No, not now. No, this was before video, kids. But
when it was a tight game, Chelsea used to bring me on for Zola just to like see it out, didn't they? He'll have it. He'll have it on his LinkedIn profile, won't he? I'd imagine.
I'm sure.
Ex-Premier League star Joe Sherrin.
Trying to think any other players who've had not necessarily in terms of like 1 minute, but short-lived careers. Okay, one I'm thinking of now. I remember when John Sheridan was kind of like a big thing at Leeds, and then Brian Clough bought him at Nottingham Forest, and then just basically got especially for a big money signing, who was seen as kind of like one of the top up-and-coming players in the division at the time, and then sold him something like 2 months later to Wednesday. Any other players who've had kind of weird careers at clubs?
Well, weirdly, even less than Sherrin's few seconds, there was the famous David Unsworth.
Of course. Thing,
who, like, Aston Villa bought him, didn't they? Or West Ham? Is it West Ham they bought him off? Yeah.
Possibly, yeah, and they just sold him.
Yeah, and then Mrs. Unsworth got involved and didn't like that he was... Well, basically, she thought Birmingham was a bit shit and didn't want... the commute was too long, something like that. It was too long from where they lived because he got back late from his first day of training, something like that. So they moved to Everton instead.
I'm always sceptical when I hear these stories. It's like, I remember Mark Wright in 1988... Mark Wright playing for Derby. Wednesday and Derby, Mark Wright is in the England centre-back. Wednesday and Derby arranged a fee. And then Mark Wright, I think his wife said she didn't want to move north. And then about 2 months later, he moved to Liverpool. Now, quite clearly, Liverpool were the best team in the world at the time-ish. Sheffield Wednesday weren't. So, I mean, it was a pretty easy... But anyway, I just imagined there'd probably been whisperings behind the scenes. And then, but you know, okay, Everton are a little bit different to Liverpool, no disrespect to Everton fans. But yeah, what was it, Mrs. Unsworth's fault? Maybe. But yeah, I always treat those with a bit of scepticism.
Yeah, and there was, around the same time, there was Joey, I'll pronounce his name wrong, Joey Beauchamp, was it? He went from Swindon to West Ham, and then that was too far for him to go. So before he even played for West Ham, he joined Oxford instead, because that was a better commute.
In terms of like your, I don't know, career progression, or what I'm trying to say, your ambition, I mean, that's pretty pathetic, right? You know, like, oh, West Ham, it's too far for me to travel. I'll play for Oxford instead.
Yeah, because it's not like you're getting, like, an offer of an office job and it's a long commute, is it? This is, like, your 15-year window of a career, and you can sort of further your career by playing for a bigger club. And if you turn it down, you might not get a better opportunity.
Although, I was thinking about this today, Sheffield Wednesday legend Terry Curran, who he was a first team regular at Southampton in the 70s. Southampton were in the top division, and he dropped down two divisions to play for Wednesday, his local club. He supported Wednesday as a kid, and you know, Jack Charlton was manager. He kind of bought into Jack Charlton's vision and all that. And it just got me thinking, that's just wild. In today,
no one does. No.
Could you imagine? You know, just like, I think he's a Southampton regular. I don't know, was it Ward Prowse just thinking, yeah, I'm going to play for Accrington Stanley because I want to be near my mum's house? I mean, it's just.
There used to be rumours like Paul Scholes wanted to play for Oldham before his career ran out.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, didn't he end up managing them for like a couple of weeks and was terrible?
Probably.
I'm sure he had a really short tenure as manager, but yeah, because he was a big Oldham fan, I think, and he wanted to play for Oldham, but I don't think it ever came to fruition. But no, you just couldn't imagine it now. But I'm sure there are a lot of these like big name players who actually support piss poor teams. There must be, assuming that the majority of them are football fans. Then who's to, I'm making this up as I go along, but who's to say that, like, I don't know, John Stones isn't like a huge Accrington Stanley fan?
He's definitely not a Bury fan, is he?
He's not a Bury fan.
Was it Bury? Who was it? They had a player who kind of slagged him off on social media, and then he scored against when Stones was marking him in the FA Cup. No, it was at Port Vale, wasn't it?
Was it?
It was some team down low in the divisions. There was a historical tweet that was discovered. This guy slagging off John Stones. And then all the Man City players were just ripping it out of Stones. And apparently Stones got really arsey about it. Like, you know, like refused to look at the player before the game or anything. And like, you know, even though all the Man City players were like, were bigging
but,
this
yeah,
up. Saying
well, maybe, this is, maybe Stones is like a Stoke City fan then.
Possibly.
But, no, I can't remember that at all, but I shall investigate that.
There we go.
Yes, so Joe Sherwin, shortest ever Premier League career.
Okay, I like that. Good start. And we're going to go on to the one-minute quiz now. Mr. Day, let me get my one-minute timer up. But in Chelsea's history, they have had 39 different managers. Two managers have been there twice. And this includes caretaker managers. So Chelsea have had 39 different managers, and your goal today is to name 10. And I believe, what's the score? It's 2-2 at the moment. We're drawing, aren't we?
We're 2-2 with one draw. Yeah.
Yes, right. Okay. So you now have 1 minute to name 10 people out of 39 who have managed Chelsea. Your 1 minute starts now.
Thomas Tuchel.
Good start.
Frank Lampard.
Yes.
The one before Frank Lampard. Oh, Sarri.
I was going to say that doesn't count. Yeah, Sarri, that's three.
Three. Ancelotti.
Yep.
Villas-Boas.
Yep.
Mourinho.
Yep.
Conte.
Yep.
Hoddle.
Oh, yes.
Vialli.
Yes.
Hullett.
Yes.
Hollins.
Oh, yes.
Ranieri.
Wait, Holland. Okay, yes. Ranieri, yes. You're well over now. You're on 12, but keep going.
Ian Porterfield.
Ian Porterfield, yes. Got 13 seconds.
I've tried to if I missed one of the... Oh, Benitez.
Yes.
Gus Hiddink.
Oh, on to 15.
Big Phil Scolari.
Scolari, number 16, and we're all done there. That was fantastic, Mr. Day. You've kind of exercised the demons of... There was one where you were way behind. Yeah, Brentford, wasn't it?
It's a playoff final.
Yes, playoff winners. And this time you've absolutely trounced me. I'm not sure what I was going for then. Six. You needed 10. You got 16 in the end. Let's see, any notables you missed out? I mean... He is a notable, is Graham Ricks, but probably not notable in terms of...
Clearly, I'm too young for Ricks, and it's not often you can say that, is it?
This is true. Jeff Hurst, unbelievably, had 2 years, just under 2 years, as the... I don't know why I said unbelievably. I mean, it's quite clearly believable. Danny Blanchflower, Bobby Gould, a couple of other names in there. Avram Grant, Ray Wilkins.
Oh, yeah. Was Avram Grant the only one from the... Abramovich era,
possibly.
Yeah, I forgot about him. He did quite well, I think, didn't he, Avram Grant? He was a bit hard done by.
I can't remember. Well, he was there from September 2007 to May 2008. So I don't know. 67% wins, meh. Anyway,
yeah, I think and they got to the Champions League final.
Okay, well done, Avram. Right, okay. So Simon Day, congratulations. You are now 3-2 up in the quizzes. Let's hit us with fact number two.
Fact number two is... On Boxing Day 1999, Chelsea fielded the first ever all-foreign team in the English top flight.
Ooh, when you say all-foreign, do we include Scots?
You can include them or not include them, but there was none in the team. There was no British players in the team.
Okay.
There was a couple of World Cup winners in the team. There was Frank Leboeuf and Didier Deschamps. A couple of proper like world class players, Roberto Di Matteo. The aforementioned Dan Petrescu played.
Di Matteo, you missed out him managers, didn't you?
Oh yeah, he managed, didn't he? He was another mid season change, wasn't he?
And he won the Champions League, didn't he?
He won the Champions League, he did, and then he got sacked like four games later. Something ridiculous. which Chelsea will want to do, but fair play to them. I did read recently that Chelsea have twice sacked managers 2 weeks after they've won Premier League Manager of the Month.
Wow.
I think Avram Grant might be one, actually. I can't think of the other one was. But yeah, they've twice sacked managers just after they've won Manager of the Month.
You know, most clubs, it doesn't work. Real Madrid and Chelsea seem to be the only clubs who can do this. You know, quite often, you know, you say like Manchester United or, you know, said the thing, obviously not now, but with Solskjaer, you know, we want a bit of continuity. We want to kind of settle things down. And that's generally seen as the best way. And I think it generally is the best way. But yeah, for some reason, Chelsea and Real Madrid, it just works, doesn't it? It just works.
And I still do find it funny that every time Chelsea do it, like obviously Lampard was the last one to go, all like fans and... social media is all in uproar about like, oh, the game's got, what are Chelsea doing? They don't know what they're doing, do they? And you're like, hang on, Chelsea do this like every couple of years and it pretty much without fail always works, doesn't it?
Right, yeah. They play to them.
Yeah, they've got some... I mean, clearly, I don't know how they do it, but clearly Tuchel's a fantastic manager. They just upgrade, basically, don't they?
Mm.
If someone's struggling a little bit and there's someone available and they can upgrade, then... They go for it and it seems to work. So fair play to them.
Indeed. I wonder if they've got somebody, they obviously must have a football expert who's in there. Because, you know, quite often clubs don't seem to understand with managers and you know, being a fit for a certain club. You know, an example for me would be when David Moyes went to Manchester United.
Yeah.
And if you've heard the Man U players at the time talking about it, he would do things like when they were in Sydney, he just took them out to Bondi Beach and it just turned into an absolute shit show. You know, obviously, all of a sudden, thousands of people surrounding them, security, like trying to get them out there before a player got attacked. And he's like, oh, but we did this at Everton. And, you know, it's just like there are so many little things like that where they like he didn't seem to realise the enormity of what he had got into. Whereas Chelsea, like you said, you know, they don't just kind of like accidentally appoint, I don't know, some like long ball merchant, if there are any left.
Yeah, they wouldn't go for Big Sam, would they?
No. They always seem to kind of get it right, or if they don't, they're very brutal, aren't they? But there we go.
Yeah, exactly. If it's someone like Lampard, where they didn't get it right, they got rid pretty quickly, didn't they?
Mm.
But
going back to foreign players, though.
Yes.
What do you think of this? Because obviously, you know, it's been an issue that people have debated. I mean, nowadays, I mean, it's kind of, I don't suppose it is an issue anymore. Foreign players now are English football, are the Premier League, right? I mean, it's nothing without the non-English players. Where do you stand? Good thing or bad thing for English football?
Do I like foreigners? Is that what you're saying?
Not exactly, Mr. Farage.
Yeah, they're all right, I suppose. I just find it weird, not weird, but quite interesting how quickly this sort of developed. So this was 1999 when Chelsea are fielding 11 foreign players in the starting lineup. It's only a few years before that where you would have foreign players. There was something like, when the Premier League started, there was something silly like 14 players in the entire Premier League. And when your team signed a foreign player, not that it ever happened to Gillingham, but when your team signed a foreign player, it was a massive deal, wasn't it?
Yes. When Eric Cantona was on trial at Wednesday, if you remember that famous trial, I remember that you can still see it on YouTube, the Yorkshire TV thing about it. And it's saying, if Wednesday do sign him, there'll be a real international flair to Hillsborough because the club already have a Swede and an American playing for them. And it was just this amazing thing. They might have a third non-British player. This is wild.
Yeah, cosmopolitan. did it get to the stage at Sheffield Wednesday where like Cantona had to do the beret wearing photo shoot and like holding a baguette or something? I'm sure he probably had to do when he joined Leeds, didn't they?
No, but yeah, I remember at the time when Carboni and De Canio joined and they were biting into like frozen pizza on the pitch at Hillsborough. I remember in one of the Wednesday fanzines, I was only 17 or 18, so I didn't really understand the guy's point at the time. I now look back and the guy was like, I was so humiliated to be a Wednesday fan when I saw that picture. It was just pathetic. This kind of...
I think the opposite happened. I think when like David Platt and Des Walker went to Italy, they had to do like photo shoots, like...
A bland sandwich or...
Yeah, fish and chips. Yeah. Now, what they probably did was they possibly made them do a like, bowler hat and briefcase and umbrella. Maybe like right. A city gent, do you reckon?
Indeed. And, you know, I remember as well, actually, if you read the De Canio autobiography, talking about kind of like stereotyping players on their nationality, he said at one point Danny Wilson was talking about giving a team talk, and he starts saying, yeah, the Italians need to start passing it to people apart from themselves. And De Canio said that's when I just got up and just went mental, just started ripping into him. Like, you know, my name's Paolo, his name's Benny. You don't call us the Italian. And you think about that. That was, what, 23 years? Absolutely brutal to think. I mean, and rightly so. You know, De Canio obviously got a lot of things wrong, but he was spot on with that one. Although he is a fascist, isn't he? So maybe.
Well, I think he likes his trains on time, doesn't he? Hello, De Canio. Yeah. Yes. I don't know how deep his fascism runs, but I think we can safely say he believes in an efficient train service, doesn't he?
Didn't he give a Nazi salute after a game?
Yes. I think it's Lazio, I'm going to say.
Yes, because Lazio are the right-wing team, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it was against Roma in the derby match, I think, from what I remember. Anyway, if De Canio never did do a Nazi salute, can I just apologise? I'm just going to stick the word allegedly in there, just in the very off chance that we get sued.
Yeah, and likewise, if he's not fussed about trains being on time, then I apologise as well.
Nice. Okay, well, now we've discussed the impact of foreigners on English football, let's talk about another foreigner, this week's bizarre fan. Chelsea, you know what? There are a lot of candidates. They seem to have hundreds of celebrity fans. The one I've gone for this week, though, and I've gone for him because he's a proper hardcore fan, is the Canadian rocker Bryan Adams. Not only did he release one of the greatest songs of all time, Summer of 69, but he's been I think he was a season ticket holder in the 80s, so he's not a bandwagon jumper. He was there before they were rich. You know, he's turned down executive boxes because he wants to be among the real fans. You know, he's a hardcore fan. So yeah, to this our bizarre fan this week is Bryan Adams. What do you think about that?
I did know that this is the first celebrity fan where I've been fully aware that he was a fan of that club. And I'm quite pleased you've said Bryan Adams, just purely because he almost got into the three facts, Bryan Adams.
Ooh,
just because Because there's a song that he wrote about Chelsea that could possibly be, certainly lyrically and possibly musically, the worst song I've ever heard.
Nice.
It's called We're Gonna Win.
Okay, that already sounds like something I would have written at primary school.
Well, you possibly also would have written lyrics like, forget about a draw, we're going to score, and then we're going to get a few more, maybe another one, just to be sure. And it just goes on like that. We'll make you look like an amateur until the final whistle, it's a war, and then amateur. We're going to pick you up off the floor. Yeah.
I think you can only get away with that in rap. I think you can twist. You can twist, what am I trying to say, syllables like that. But with regular songs. A bit. But it sounds... So We're Gonna Win. Was this like a cup final song or something?
No, I think it's on one of you. It might be on 18 Till I Die. It's on a legit album, I think.
Big album, because I've actually heard of it. For me to have heard of a Bryan Adams album means it must have been a pretty big album.
Yeah, I think it was. But the only footage I could find of it, well, I might have to put this on our YouTube channel just because it's so absurd, but I don't want to pay any. Like, I don't want to play it now. I'm gonna have to pay Brian a fee. But anyway, the only footage I could find of it was him performing it at the Royal Albert Hall in about the year 2000, with on stage with Damon Hill, Eddie Jordan, and Colin Jackson.
That's a bizarre group.
Yeah, and there's another celebrity I forgot, and they're performing it in front of a packed Albert Hall. And it's nice. It sounds like something you would learn on your first day of like how to write a rock song.
And so are they all Chelsea fans as well, presumably, or
no, they're just there for a ride. Well, they're
just
people from a sport who can play a musical instrument. Apart from Colin Jackson, who was just on stage.
Okay. He was doing the Liam Gallagher tambourine kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, I think he had like a triangle or something like that. But Brian Adams is a legit fan.
He is a legit fan. And Bizarre, because let's be honest, you know, the remit here, and, you know, we can't really mention Bizarre fans without mentioning Osama bin Laden. I mean, I feel like we just have to bring him up once an episode. But, yes, you know, in terms of Bizarre, well, we're talking about, you know, a Canadian rock star being a season ticket holder, which is pretty bizarre in itself. So, you know, not only is he a hardcore fan, I think he falls under the remit of Bizarre-ish.
And he is legit very famous, which I feel like we've generally hit the spot on that, apart from Dean Gaffney. No offence to Dean Gaffney, but he's genuinely extremely famous, isn't he?
But I think that kind of adds to Gaffney's allure as a Bizarre fan. The fact that he's just a Bizarre celebrity, can we say? Is that fair? So I think Dean Gaffney, Bizarre anything, Dean Gaffney can be in it, to be honest.
And also, he's one of these celebrities who you're guaranteed to get a little laugh when you mention him, aren't you?
Yes, this is true.
Blah, blah, Brian Harvey. Something like that. You guarantee people will laugh when you mention Dean Gaffney.
Oh, dear me. Yes, this is true. This is true. I forgot Brian Harvey existed. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so there we go. There's our Bizarre fan. Mr. Day, let's get the third and final fact.
Third and final fact is the first ever floodlit game of cricket in England took place at Stamford Bridge.
Nice.
In 1980, between the West Indies and Essex.
That is why? Okay.
Well, it was meant to be the West Indies and Surrey, but Surrey ended up having a fixture clash because of a rain affected game, so they couldn't fulfil the fixture. So Essex stepped in and actually beat the West Indies, thanks to a Graham Gooch 100.
Nice, nice. Well, there are lots of historic scores, as there always are in every single cricket match. Whenever I read any report of a cricket match, that I always read, you know, it was the first time in history that somebody batting number 7 at Old Trafford on a Monday scored an odd number of runs. And they'll always use the word historic, which kind of winds me up. It's just like, come on, you could literally pull any fact out of your anus right now.
Yeah, well, it's because cricket is such a stats-rich sport that you can sort of break it down into such sort of minutia that almost you're right, almost everything is a record. Like, I suppose this week we saw the first ever Australian captain stand down for sending a dick pic, didn't we?
Yeah, we'll take that's a historic moment. But but I suppose from a headline writer's point of view, right? I suppose, you know, historic Gooch innings sounds better than Gooch scores 37. So I suppose if you want people to read on kind of clickbait before it was clickbait.
Yes, it was the first ever floodlit tarn in this country. And for that, and winning Man of the Match, he was awarded the Man of the Match prize of a holiday for two in Trinidad.
That's pretty damn decent, right?
But I think that's great. I like, you see like these like Premier League games where they get like the bottle of champagne, don't they? Mm. I like this idea of just having like a tangible prize, like a holiday for two or something, giving it to like... Kevin De Bruyne has won Man of the Match, so here's like you've won like a sofa or something, or you know what I mean? Or
maybe we should do a giveaway for one of our two loyal listeners, James McQueen and Paul Eddy. I mean, we could yes.
I know a few others, by the way, but yeah.
Feel free to give them a shout out, because I was going to say we could club together and maybe get them a caravan on the Isle of Sheppey for the weekend.
I don't think we should shout out everyone who listens in the same episode. I think we should spread the shout out loud.
I like that. I think I'm out already, but I'll leave it to you for the next episode.
Clearly, this will grow and grow.
This is true.
But yeah, I haven't got much to give away. But I find it very odd that they've played this cricket match on a football pitch, because it's like you get cricket matches played in Australia on like Aussie rules grounds because that's a similar sort of shape. But a football pitch is clearly a lot more rectangular, shall we say, than a football ground. So the reports I read of this were like basically hitting the ball straight was fine. It was like a normal sort of size cricket field. But the boundaries square of the wicket were ridiculously short.
Yeah, I suppose, right. The touch, like the wings, right, would have been...
Yeah, so basically it was a really high scoring game because batsmen were just playing across the line and trying to just swipe it into the main stand. Well, whatever.
Back then, didn't Chelsea have like a massive car park at one side of the ground? So you could have just used that. There's a bit of concrete at one end of the pitch. But
well, I mean, that would be pretty bad. I do sort of... I have a few times played cricket on a football pitch and it is absolutely horrendous.
Really?
Like, because clearly, I assume at Stamford Bridge they put in like a drop-in wicket rather than actually played in the centre circle on the football field. They must have had a drop-in wicket. And I'm not sort of disrespecting the Chelsea groundsman of 1980, but no matter how good the pitch was, it ain't going to be like a cricket field in terms of for like people fielding on it. Mm. It would have been pretty grim stuff, I think, fielding.
But
yeah, it wouldn't have been much fun.
Going back to that car park, though, that was mental when you think about it, right? They literally used to have cars parked behind the goals in the 80s. Well,
yeah, that is still the... I don't know if it's Oxford United's ground, the Kassam.
I've not seen that.
Yeah, that's the Kassam's like quite a few years old now. It's at least 10 years old. And behind the goal at one end is a car park. If they subsequently built on it in the last couple of years, but the last time I saw it, it was just... Obviously, there's a massive net to stop cars getting in unless it's a particularly bad shot. But yeah, it's just the car park end.
Okay.
Well, in reality, most likely you don't need four stands, do you? It's a bit. You could get away with three. You do three big stands, and then you got the full. You got the car park for the fourth, and if you happen to get like really good and up a couple of divisions, build a stand there.
Right.
There's a bit of logic to it, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, I just find that so bizarre to think that a top division team could play football with cars parked around the pitch. Literally, and for anybody who's young and doesn't remember this, it is well worth Googling the pictures. There were literally cars parked a few yards away from the pitch, which is just wild, in the stadium. We're not talking about outside with a net there. We're talking literally in the stadium by the pitch, like a Sunday league thing, but in a 40,000 stadium. You know, it's pretty wild.
It happens at cricket, doesn't it? Certainly Canterbury Cricket Ground. You can drive in and park your car by the pitch, whack a couple of deck chairs in front of your car and watch the game.
True, true, true. Though English county cricket still got an amateur vibe about it, right?
Yeah, and you don't often get 40,000 in Canterbury to watch like the County Championship Division 2 games.
This is true. This is true. So, Mr. Day, we need to decide. Arsenal are our lineal champions. What do you think about Chelsea? We've had a player who played for 12 seconds and wet himself in the centre circle against Wimbledon. We've had a car park right next to a pitch of a top division team. We've had Bryan Adams and we've had a couple of other bits and pieces. Do we think this is enough to knock Arsenal off their perch?
On its own, I don't. But Chelsea, I think, have got the best depth of facts. There's quite a few good Chelsea facts that haven't made the cut. Like Winston Bogard playing like 12 games in 5 years and phoning it in. Three player managers in a row in the 90s. Just the sheer turnover of managers in the Abramovich era. various John Terry stories that are probably best out. I just feel like they've got the best depth of fact.
Fair enough. Although I think you know, I feel like we've probably need to do it based on what we've had. I suppose you've mentioned them all now, so we can use them. So what are we going with? Are we going with Arsenal to keep the title, or do you think they're handing it over to Chelsea?
I am voting Chelsea.
Okay, right. Well, I'm going to go with you then, because I'm, as Homer Simpson once said, I'm not popular enough to be different. So the lineal title has moved hands. Arsenal will be knocked off their perch. They're no longer the most interesting football club in England. It is now Chelsea. And next week, going up in alphabetical order as we are, it's going to be Crystal Palace. What do we think? Any chance that it'll be a short-lived reign for Chelsea?
Yes. Because, interesting, I've got me three Crystal Palace facts already.
I know
what you like in these facts. We're delving back into the world of international terrorism.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm pumped for next week.
I fancy Crystal Palace's chances.
Nice. Well, Mr. Day, it's been an absolute pleasure. And to James the Queen and Paul Eddy, thank you very much for listening. That's it for this week. Please join us next week for Crystal Palace. Goodbye, everyone.